Chapter 2. Be Interested, Not Just Interesting. Henry Ford is remembered as the industrialist who introduced the Model T, the jet-black car that forever changed the way Americans wheel around, simply because it was affordable, thanks to another Ford innovation, the assembly line. Less memorable, Ford was also an aficionado of auto racing. He both designed and drove fast cars. One day in 1905, he was attending a motor race in Palm Beach, where a smash-up left a French car in pieces. Interested in more than just the spectacle, Ford walked over to the crash site after the race. He investigated the pile of steel and rubber. "I picked up a little valve strip stem. It was very light and very strong. I asked what it was made of. Nobody knew," Ford recounted in his autobiography, My Life and Work. "I gave the stem to my assistant. 'Find out all about this,' I told him. 'That is the kind of material we ought to have in our cars.' It turned out to be a steel alloy that contained vanadium, which was not manufactured in the United States at the time." Ford may have embellished this account for dramatic effect, but as biographer Stephen Watts points out, there's no doubt about the significance of Ford's finding. Vanadium steel provided the final crucial piece of the production puzzle of how to construct a durable, lightweight car at a low price. Watts explained in his book, The People's Tycoon, Henry Ford and the American Century. The Model T was introduced 3 years later, after much brainstorming, development, and prototyping. There's much about this tale that illustrates the ways of an idea hunter. It portrays someone who knew his gig, his mission, his passion, which in Ford's case was to mold a new production process to manufacture a car for everyone. It reveals a person who was quick to recognize how seemingly unrelated occurrences, a crash scene in Palm Beach or the English laboratory that experimented with vanadium, could connect with his plans and projects. But more than anything else, this story highlights the importance of being interested in the world out there. This is the first principle of the idea hunter. Note that being interested is not the same thing as being interesting. Ford did not, as far as we know, wander over to the crash scene in order to impress others with his knowledge of automobile production, or to regale them with stories of his feats as a race car driver. He simply followed his curiosity to the scene. Spotting the people who are genuinely interested is easy. Often you can see it in their body language and hear it in the questions they're asking. Kurt Bernard, a retailing consultant in New York, told of his first encounter with Sam Walton in 1967. "When he meets you, he looks at you, head cocked to one side, forehead slightly creased, and he proceeds to extract every piece of information in your possession. He always makes little notes, and he pushes on and on," Bernard recalled. "After 2.5 hours, he left, and I was totally drained. I wasn't sure what I had just met, but I was sure we would hear more from him." The world did hear more from Sam Walton, who built the Walmart empire, at least partly on the intensity of his interest, of other people's ideas. He traveled from Arkansas to Manhattan and points in between just to hear what people were saying about pricing, distribution, inventory, and other markers of his trade. As Walton once explained, this was one way he and the early Walmart managers tried to make up for our lack of experience and sophistication. Whether they're in retail or in any other line, people get ideas by cultivating a capacity for interest and the habit of intellectual curiosity. In a professional context, intellectual curiosity is basically an abiding interest in any and all matters that could improve the job you're doing. Conventional wisdom holds that the cleverer you are, the better your ideas. But in our experience, the cleverest people, important as they are in an organization, have a tendency to overestimate their brain power. Without the added component of curiosity, they stick to their success formula and may not go hunting for better ideas. In other words, they're just not interested enough. Curiosity, on the other hand, can more than make up for a lack of brilliance. No less a trailblazer than Albert Einstein once made the disarming comment, "I have no special talents. I am only passionately curious." This is often the most striking characteristic of a highly successful person. Consider this first-hand description of Scott Cook, founder and CEO of Intuit, by the writer Michael S. Hopkins. Listening, he seems to forget himself. He seems composed of pure curiosity. He's like a man who always expects that the next thing someone, anyone, tells him might be the most surprising and enlightening thing he's heard. He listens without blinking. He learns. A curious mind is on the lookout for surprises. It embraces them and finds a way to learn from them. Such thinking has a leavening effect on how we look at things because when we are curious, we are less likely to take something for granted. We look at an ordinary happening and see something extraordinary. This opens up a path to innovation, partly because an ordinary idea in one setting could prove remarkable if applied to another setting. Curiosity at the Trading Post. In the early 20th century, hundreds of thousands of people journeyed far to take part in the Canadian fur trade. Many saw how inhabitants of the northerly regions stored their food in the winter by burying the meats and vegetables in the snow. But probably few of them entertained thoughts about how this custom might relate to other fields of endeavor. One who did was a young man named Clarence Birdseye, who spent 4 years on a fur trading expedition that began in 1912. He was amazed to find that freshly caught fish and duck, frozen quickly in such a fashion, retained their taste and texture. He started wondering, why can't we sell food in the United States that operates on the same basic principle? With such thoughts, an industry was born. Birdseye developed the means of freezing foods rapidly, and then sold his ideas and processes to General Foods in 1930. He later developed inexpensive freezer displays that enabled a system of distribution. His name, adapted for brand purposes as Birdseye, is still seen by all who open freezer doors in supermarkets. The father of frozen foods made something extraordinary from what, for the northern folk, was the ordinary practice of preserving food in the frozen ground. We don't know exactly what went on in Birdseye's mind when he observed this means of storage, but the thinking process is described well by Tom Peters. Something mysterious happens to a curious, fully engaged mind, he writes in The Brand U 50. Strange little sparks are set off, connections made, insights triggered. The results? An exponentially increased ability to tune up, reinvent, wow-eyes today's project at work. In other words, curiosity is a way of adding value to what you see. Birdseye's curiosity was strong enough to lift him out of the routine way of seeing things. It set the stage for innovation and discovery, for coming up with something new. There's an additional and critical facet to the frozen foods discovery. The idea came from already existing practice. It wasn't manufactured out of thin air or spontaneously generated in the brain of a creative genius. Birdseye took the same cognitive route that countless idea hunters have taken. He noticed an idea in one environment and transplanted it into a different one. His curiosity added phenomenal value to what he saw, but the idea was already out there. Sometimes ideas just need to be found and replicated. One-size-fits-all coffee lids, for example, must be universal by now. They're a simple case of reuse. People all over the world have used and reused this idea without altering it substantially, just as people might use a particular casserole recipe. The act by itself has an enormously productive impact on people's work and entire economies. Birdseye, however, saw an idea and found a dramatically different purpose for it. This is the full repurposing of an idea. And this is what Phil Schiller did when he and the team at Apple were looking for the right user interface for their music player, which was on the drawing boards at the time. Presumably his mind flashed back to the early 1980s when Hewlett-Packard put out its workstation computer, which sported a scroll wheel. And this went on to become a pronounced feature of the first iPod. That's repurposing. The exact cost of such a discovery? Zero. That's the leveraging power of ideas.